Everybody, can you hear me? Hi, thanks for having me here. It's good to be here. I'm going to talk about making sustainable aviation fuel from methanol and some of the technologies that UOP as a process licensor has developed to enable this pathway, and some of what we're seeing in the market that we think are driving things towards this pathway. So this is just a quick friendly reminder from the Honeywell Legal Department about how what I'm going to talk about today is based on internal projections, and nothing is assumed to be guaranteed. That's definitely going to happen. Okay, so quick overview. So again, first I'll go into what we're seeing in the market a little bit that we feel like is driving this push towards using methanol as an intermediate to make sustainable aviation fuel. And then I'll dive into more about the technology specifically that UOP has developed. And then we'll end with a little bit of information on potential integration opportunities between methanol production and the SAF unit. Okay, so on this slide, we're sort of reiterating a little bit what's been talked about already this morning with the different government mandates that are in place that are driving the use of renewable methanol. Specifically, the left-hand side here talking about mandates in the maritime shipping industry, specifically in the EU, additional restrictions on cap and trade coming in, the Fuel EU mandate that's supposed to reduce maritime greenhouse gas emissions by up to 80% going out to 2050, and others that are already in place. These mandates apply to 100% of the ocean shipment in the EU itself, and 50% of the trade going in and outside of the EU. So a significant portion of the maritime market is affected by these mandates, and there are severe penalties in place that only get more and more stringent and severe as we go out past 2030 and beyond. So as a response to this, what UOP is seeing in the market is a couple of things. So one, as has already been discussed today, shipping companies are starting to build out ships that can run on both traditional bunker fuel and also increasingly renewable fuels, specifically renewable methanol. And secondly, we're starting to see a big uptick in the amount of offtake agreements for these types of renewable fuels for the shipping industry, including renewable methanol. However, the shipping industry is not the only sector where we're seeing this increase in demand for renewable fuels. As we mentioned, the aviation industry has started passing more and more regulations and restrictions mandating the use of sustainable aviation fuel in airlines. This is coming up most in the EU, UK, the US, with the carrot and stick approach that we've talked about already today. In the EU, most of the regulations are mandates and restrictions in place to set the amount of SAF that's required. But in the US, we're more looking at the incentive approach with things from the Inflation Reduction Act and different carbon capture credits that are there. And now there are technologies in place now to take advantage of this imposed demand for SAF to convert renewable carbon sources, specifically methanol, into sustainable aviation fuel. And from what we see, we believe there is a financial incentive to do so. So on the right here, we're showing a hypothetical annual value build chart for a given annual production capacity of methanol and the potential revenue that could be realized by upgrading that methanol in the light blue bar for that same amount of methanol. If that's converted to white olefin and then eventually into sustainable aviation fuel, the green bar represents the potential additional value that could be realized by upgrading their methanol. It's almost 50% increase in value for the same fixed amount of methanol. And we think that is what's going to drive growth in this market, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So in the rest of this talk, we'll go over a little bit of the considerations that we think you need to think about when building out methanol to jet project, the technology that UOP has developed, and then some integration opportunities as well. Okay, so for those of you already familiar with these sustainable aviation fuel regulations, you'll be well aware of all the different routes of production possible to get to sustainable aviation fuel from various renewable feed sources. Some of the more already established technologies, like fats, oils, and greases, and ethanol, are already been implemented in the marketplace. But now, because of these new regulations, we're starting to see more and more interest in things like gasified biomass and electrolytic hydrogen captured CO2 being used to make sustainable aviation fuel. UOP offers technology solutions for all these different upgrading routes, but what we're going to talk about here today is specifically around using gasified biomass, electrolytic hydrogen, using renewable methanol as an intermediate to make sustainable aviation fuel. We think that using methanol is so interesting for this purpose for a few different reasons, mainly because of how flexible methanol as an intermediate is and how fungible that makes the MTJ process. You can source methanol from a variety of different renewable feedstocks, so you're not really limited by certain specific low availability feed. And that makes the MTJ process a little bit more fungible because it can accept all these different methanol feedstocks. It doesn't have to be one specific grade or one specific type. So it's possible to combine feeds from a variety of sources into a single methanol adjustment. Now, currently the mandates that are in place for sustainable aviation fuel up to 2030, going out for 10, 20 years past that, the renewable feeds that are available in the marketplace today are not sufficient to meet that demand for SAF. There's only so much used cooking oil available in the world right now, and that's not going to be enough to upgrade into the amount of sustainable jet fuel that's required. So there's going to need to be something to step up, some alternate renewable feed source to step up that can be used to take this renewable carbon, turn it into jet fuel. And we think that methanol is poised to play a big part in this new SAF global economy, and that's why we're very excited about it. Okay. So one more slide on some regulations that are in place right now. So in addition to the specifically biogenic SAF regulations that have already been discussed, in the EU in particular, there's additional mandates that are even more interesting for use of methanol as an intermediate. Recently, there have been regulations announced requiring a certain amount of RFNBOs in the SAF pool in the EU, starting out in 2030 and beyond. So these are renewable fuels of non-biogenic origin, which means specifically the fuel value of the fuel comes from electrolytic hydrogen, e-methanol and e-SAF. And because of the mandates that are required for the implementation of these fuels, and the very, very low availability of them in the market right now, it's currently zero production of e-SAF in the market right now. The market value of e-SAF relative to even biogenic SAF is huge. So the amount of potential market value for a renewable methanol project going not just to biogenic SAF, but to e-SAF is very, very compelling, and we think is really going to drive the market for renewable methanol going forward. So in these graphs, what we're trying to show is our projections for global SAF demand in the near future here, broken out by which different renewable feedstock and different pathway is going to end up filling those demands. And we're going to see a big proportion of it come from ethanol, come from fats, oils, and greases, but there's a limit to how much of the market can be satisfied by those feeds. And the demand for ESAF in particular, with zero global production right now, and mandates starting to kick in around 2030 and beyond, there's going to be a huge value for ESAF using methanol as an intermediate. Okay, so here we're just showing a very simplified overview of what a renewable methanol to sustainable aviation fuel project might look like. So starting from identifying your carbon source, whether that's captured carbon from some industrial process or gasifying biomass, and then combining it with renewable hydrogen to make your renewable methanol, and then taking that renewable methanol and either selling it into the maritime shipping industry or going all the way and converting that methanol into sustainable aviation fuel. So at the front end of this process, I just want to say a couple things about what is typically the first step when thinking about building out one of these methanol to SAF projects, and that's where is the carbon going to come from, particularly if you're considering carbon capture. There are a number of different carbon capture technologies available right now. And just a little plug for UOP, a couple of our folks from our carbon capture team are here today. So if you have any specific questions about a carbon capture project, there's a booth outside. We'd love to talk with you about it. I'll do the quick overview of our spiel here. But many different considerations for how you're going to set up your carbon capture process at the beginning of a methanol to jet project. So things like, is the source of the carbon biogenic or fossil-based? What are the process conditions of the stream that you're trying to capture from? And what is specifically, what is the partial pressure of the CO2 that you're trying to capture? So all these different factors affect your carbon capture project and what can have roll-down effects on the economics of the methanol plant and on the SAF plant at the background. So in this overview slide, we tried to highlight what are some of the typical sources of CO2 emissions that are common for these renewable methanol and renewable jet facilities, organized from low CO2 concentration on the left to higher on the right. Direct air capture is probably not quite there yet. We're a little ways off from that being implemented wide stream. But a lot of these projects we're seeing, they're getting their CO2 from capturing it from power generation plants, from the pulp and paper industry, and from cement plants. Now, the type of carbon capture solution that you implement for one of these different emission sources is really dependent on the quality of the stream and the concentration of the CO2 in that stream. The higher the concentration of CO2, the easier it is to collect, the cheaper the project's going to be. This graph is kind of showing a representation of different carbon capture technologies depending on stream pressure and CO2 concentration. And making sure you identify the correct solution for your project, again, this is very important for your overall project economics. And again, I encourage you to come stop by our table to talk more about carbon capture. Okay, but for this talk, we're going to focus on primarily our upgrading of the renewable methanol that you make from your captured carbon to sustainable aviation fuel. And we think making SAF using methanol as an intermediate for the renewable carbon is very interesting because of a lot of the benefits offered by this type of flow scheme. Methanol to jet, very flexible to different methanol feedstock. I'll get into it a little bit later. This is a mature technology that UOP has a lot of experience in, and we're also able to achieve a very high level of selectivity to sustainable aviation fuel. So talking a little bit more about the feedstock flexibility for methanol to jet project. The front end of the methanol jet project is going to be the UOP MTO process, and that's very flexible in terms of the feed methanol that can come in. We can assume anything from standard AA grade methanol, 99.85% purity, all the way down to much cruder sources with 5-10% water in them if necessary. And because we have the flexibility to accept different grades of methanol from different sources, there's the opportunity to set up kind of a hub and spoke approach to a methanol to jet project where you'd have a large, centrally located methanol to SAF upgrading facility that's being fed by a number of different satellite methanol sources in order to take advantage of economies of scale. So you're only dealing with one large capital project upgrading to SAF. Additionally, the methanol jet technology that UOP has is very selective to SAF just based on the way that it's converting the methanol to to sustainable aviation fuel. So on the bottom of this graph, we kind of have an overview of the block flow of the process. So starting out with the methanol dehydration step, the UOP MTO process, which converts methanol, and then through a dehydration reaction, we get primarily ethylene and propylene light olefins at the back end. Those light olefins are sequentially oligomerized to jet fuel range carbon numbers, and then hydrogenated at the end of the process. And that sequential building up of the carbon number to the jet fuel range is what gives us this very high selectivity to SAF. So we're not over-converting anything to diesel and beyond energy material and then cracking it back down. We're building up sequentially, stopping the reaction, hydrogenating it, and getting a very high yield to SAF as a result. All right, so now I'll talk a little bit more about each individual step. So first step in the methanol to jet process is UOP MTO process. Now this is an existing technology. We talked a little bit about that this morning already. This has been rolled out at UOP for 10, 15 years now. We have 7 units currently operating in China. They're all operating at nameplate capacity and with no major issues. They're all running very well. This is a FCC style technology that does the methanol dehydration reaction. We get a very high yield to ethylene and propylene, and the catalyst that's used in the operation of this process has been manufactured and demonstrated by UOP for over a decade. On the left here, we're showing what the traditional MTO flow scheme is. If you're making olefins for the petrochemical industry, you need very, very high purity ethylene propylene products. For the MTO for SAF production process, we actually don't need that high of a purity of ethylene propylene products. So a lot of extra equipment in the standard MTO design is actually removed in our implementation of MTO for jet. So there's no giant C2 splitter, C3 splitter column at the back end of the fractionation section that's required to get down to super low levels of ethylene and propane. You can eliminate that equipment. There's also this the olefin cracking process in the blue box here. So the traditional MTO reaction actually produces a small amount of byproduct C4, C5, C6 olefins that are not required for the petrochemical industry. So there's a whole subunit in the traditional MTO that cracks those high molecular weight olefins back down to ethylene. For methanol to jet, because we're slowly building up these small olefins into jet fuel, the higher molecular olefins are actually beneficial for the process because it takes fewer steps to get up to jet range. So we prefer that, and we can completely eliminate the OCT process for methanol to jet. So because we're able to eliminate some of this fractionation equipment and this OCP equipment, the CapEx for the MTJ MTO unit is much less than for a traditional MTO. So that's a big advantage of this existing technology. In terms of commercial readiness, I can say that we announced last month that one of our existing MTO customers in China, they recently signed on to revamp their current MTO unit to add on the back end oligomerization section. We're going to be transitioning from a fossil-based MTO process to carbon capture, renewable methanol, and we're going to be making jet fuel with the oleic process and the back end. So that was just announced. That was the first license we announced for MTJ. We're very excited about that one. Okay. So now we can talk about the second half of the methanol to jet process, and that's oligomerizing the light olefins to sustainable aviation fuel. This is a newer technology for UOP that we've just rolled out in the last couple of years, but this is based on foundational technologies that UOP has been practicing for decades. We have lots of experience with light olefin oligomerization, lots of experience with selective hydrogenation. Our most prevalent oleic technology is the catalytic condensation or cat poly process. It takes a C3, C4 range olefins and makes diesel blend stock out of it. That's been rolled out since, I think this is 1950, but I've heard it's been around even longer than that, but I haven't had any. No one at work has been around that long to tell me otherwise. That's more of a rudimentary process. The flow scheme that our oligomerization technology is actually based on is similar to our indirect alkylation technology, which takes, it's essentially isobutylene dimerization. It's used to upgrade C4 olefins to high octane alkylate. But the polymerization and recycle of olefin is very, very similar and was the basis to what we use for the MTJ oligomerization process. So we're actually able to use a flow scheme and a process technology from an existing process, and that's how we were able to roll out the MTJ technology so quickly. The oligomerization, the specific oligomerization catalyst that we used, again, it's based on existing technology. Our cameting process, which oligomerizes then C3 to C5 olefins that are byproducts from the standard fossil FCC to diesel range material, was developed back in 2016. This is a zeolitic catalyst that that does very selective oligomerization of these light and mid-range olefins to distillate range material. And the catalyst that was developed for this process was the basis for the catalyst that we use in our methanol to jet oligomerization catalyst. And so because we had these technologies on itself, we had a flow scheme from our in-out process and a catalyst from the cataloging process. We were able to combine those two technologies very quickly together, and we've rolled out this methanol jet process just in the last couple of years. UOP also has an ethanol dehydration and upgrading to SAF process, an ethanol to jet technology. And the back end of that, the oligomerization process for that, is actually essentially the exact same as that for methanol to jet. You're still oligomerizing light olefins to jet range material, and the flow schemes are very similar. And again, because ethanol to jet kind of came out into the market a little bit earlier than methanol to jet, we've had that running start that which helps us roll out the MTJ process even further. We've had multiple licenses go through for the ethanol to jet process that have already gone through the detailed engineering phase and are now entering into procurement and hopefully into construction very soon. So we're very pleased with the rapid adoption of our technology and how quickly it looks like it's being taken up in the marketplace. Okay. All right, so on the back end of the process now, the last thing I wanted to talk about was potential integration opportunities with the methanol to jet plant and the upstream methanol synthesis unit. So I mentioned earlier that one of the benefits of the MTJ plant is it's very fungible, can accept methanol feeds from a variety of different sources, which can enable a type of hub and spoke approach to the design if you're not able to source enough methanol from a single supply. However, in the instances where you are able to co-locate a single methanol production facility with the methanol to jet plant, there are even more advantages that you can that you can leverage because of the different integration opportunities between the two technologies. So again, because the MTJ process and the front end MTO unit is so flexible in terms of the methanol that it can accept, you can really tailor the methanol production upstream in terms of the purity and the fractionation at the back end of that methanol plant to match up well with the MTO process and the methanol to jet plant at the back end. So you don't have to over-engineer the methanol plant to produce a super high grade of methanol. And you can really work to make sure that those are well connected. Additionally, the methanol to jet process itself is very operationally efficient. It's a net producer of HP, MP, and LP steam. It's a net producer of green off-gas for fired fuel. And a lot of those additional utilities that are a byproduct of the MTJ process can be recycled back to the methanol unit, lowering the overall OPEX for the entire complex. There's other additional, as you go into the detailed design of a given MTJ project, there's other operational synergies that can be taken advantage of by combining the two units in terms of heat integration and other utility management. So we're really excited about this potential integration opportunity with methanol synthesis licensors to try to make the overall project as economical as possible. Okay, so again, I just wanted to sum up a little bit here. So the big takeaway is because of all these SAF mandates that have recently come up in the market, and because of the dearth of renewable feedstocks that are currently available to meet this SAF demand, we think that the use of methanol as a chemical intermediate for captured carbon and electrolytic hydrogen to sustainable aviation fuel is going to have a big place in the market. We are very excited about the potential for these projects to start to develop. And we just got a couple of some of the key aspects that we talked about here. So think about the source of the carbon. Again, how carbon capture is set up, making sure the right technology solution is identified for your project that has a big trickle-down effect on the overall economics. So making sure that that is set at the beginning is important. A big benefit of the MTJ process is the diversity of the different offtake options that you have. Because methanol is such a flexible and fungible intermediate, you can think of an overall methanol to SAF project as sort of a staged investment. If you wanted to construct a renewable methanol plant first and then start selling that renewable methanol as is, and then look at adding on the SAF plant at the back end in the future, that's certainly an option. And because of the flexibility of methanol as an intermediate, it enables that that type of investment. And again, the MTO unit itself is very flexible in terms of the types of methanol that it can accept. So it allows you to source methanol from different locations and operate a single larger SAF plant that combines feeds from different sources. For these methanol to jet technologies, the technology risk assessment is also very, very important. For the process that UOP has developed, we think that because it's based on our MTO process, which has already been commercialized, and our other oligomerization technologies that have been around in the market for a while, we think we have a relatively low technology risk compared to some other CO2 to jet fuel pathways. And we're very comfortable with beginning detailed design discussions today. And finally, economy is the scale. We've already touched on this a little bit. The fact that we can take CO2, methanol from a wide variety of sources, roll those up into a single renewable methanol feed that's going into an MTJ plant, we really think will unlock the potential of the e-fining methanol to jet technology, because you can build a much larger unit and take advantage of those economies. That's good. And so I think I'm almost on time. Sorry if I speak too quickly. I'm happy to answer any questions at this time.